Welcome to Behind the Game, the Kids in the Game official podcast, where we cover the intersection of youth development, sports, education, and technology in the New York City landscape.
Hey everybody, Paul O'Connor here. Welcome to episode 13 of Behind the Game, Kids in the Game official podcast. On this episode, we are joined by Ian Goldberg. He is the founder of iSport 360. We are talking all things youth sports, youth development, parent engagement, coaches training. Awesome episode. Really appreciate Ian coming on. Without further ado, give it a listen now. Okay, we are now joined by Ian Goldberg. He is the founder of iSport 360. Ian, welcome to our office. Thank you so much for coming by, and we're excited to talk with you today.
Absolutely, me too. Thanks for having me, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get into iSport 360, want to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about your professional background and what led you to to this point.
Yeah, well, I started my career, at the White House and spent a couple of years there right out of college, which was a really interesting experience. Yeah. But I wouldn't say that's what led me into technology and digital marketing. But I did spend about 10 years in New York City in digital marketing. So I got very familiar with technology and website development. There weren't apps to develop back in the 1990s, but did some work for some large clients such as Sprint, some of the big financial services firms in New York City. And that's when I became close to technology, development, that whole creative process. And in terms of what led me to launch iSport 360, I'm a sports dad, I'm a youth sports coach, and I live in the New Jersey suburbs. And when I started coaching my two young daughters about 7 years ago, I very quickly saw that we needed some tools to help coaches and parents and kids work together the way they do in schools, for example. I mean, there is a certain infrastructure in place for teachers and parents and kids to work together. And I just felt like there was a need for that in youth sports.
Awesome. Yeah, no, you're totally right. We run in, obviously work in about 60 schools here at Kids in the Game, and we run into different apps or platforms that students are using to communicate with their teachers, teachers using to communicate with the parents, even if it's something as simple as posting their grades. You know, for me growing up, it was Blackboard. That was kind of what took over, and even into college, which was pretty insane growth for them, for me to basically get it in middle school, go to high school, and use it in college.
Yeah.
How has the response been to iSport 360? What type of sports do you guys cover? Is it everything, all ages, things like that?
Yep, so we are in 8 sports right now, soon to be 9. They're the biggest team sports. So it's soccer, basketball, baseball, lacrosse, ice hockey, recently added cheerleading and futsal.
Very cool.
So we really focus on the team sports. In terms of the age level of the kids, it's really for teams with kids between 8 and 14 years old, when the parents are very involved in the kids' development and their pathway to success. So the response has been great. There's really nothing like this in the market. And when I say that, I mean, there's lots of new apps in youth sports out there right now. I mean, there are great solutions for scorekeeping and scheduling and managing your the referees and managing your organization. But there really has been a lack of technology that actually focuses on the kids' success. And like Blackboard, that's what we're trying to do: help kids have success in youth sports, and not just the most elite athletes. All athletes. We want all athletes to be successful, and we bring the parents into that process, we bring the coach into that process, and so it's been going well so far. We actually have 12,000 parents, coaches, and kids on the platform, and 70,000 subscribers to our newsletter.
It's amazing. Is there a sport that you've seen, for whatever reason, that has adopted it quicker, or is there a sport that dominates the platform?
Yeah, soccer is by far our biggest sport. Which makes me happy. I've been coaching soccer for years, and the thing about soccer is that there's really not a lot of events during the game. Like in baseball, there's lots of stats. You know how your kid's doing based on hits, strikeouts, batting average. In soccer, parents are on the sidelines, and this is true for ice hockey and lacrosse as well. Parents are on the sidelines watching the game. There's not a lot of goals. there's not a lot of statistics, so they don't really know how their kids are doing. They're cheering like crazy, but we wanted to help kind of close the feedback loop so parents have a good idea of what coaches are thinking about their kids' performance.
I was going to say, playing devil's advocate, why can't a coach simply text a kid after the game and tell them how they did?
So they can. They can text. They can pick up the phone and call the parents. They can actually stand at the field or the court for an hour after every game and talk to every parent and let them know how their kids are doing. It's just not realistic. You know, and especially in a world where most coaches are volunteers, their time is kind of limited. They want the kids to succeed, but they just don't have the time or the tools to make all of that happen. So we wanted to give them a platform to make it very easy to share feedback with the kids and their parents. It takes 2 minutes after a game for a coach to use the app, share some feedback, and that's mostly feedback that would have probably gotten forgotten if coach didn't address it right at that moment.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that happens a lot is, you know, you play on Sunday, you don't practice till Tuesday, and coaches are thinking about what went wrong, what went well in the game, and, you know, they may not have individual feedback, but just team, and so I think that's a really good point. Yeah. I want to talk about, you are a board member of the National Alliance for Youth Sports. Share what that is, how long that's been around, and your kind of role with that.
Yes, absolutely. So about 6 or 8 months ago, they invited me to be on their advisory board, which they just started building, and I'm thrilled about that. In fact, I spoke at their annual conference last November as a featured speaker, which was really exciting because it validates that what we're working on here is something special. I mean, the National Alliance for Youth Sports has been around for 25 or 30 years, training coaches and the people who run youth sports organizations. But what they're recognizing now is coaches are getting good training and the administrators of these organizations are getting good training. But there's actually a new problem we need to solve, and that's parents. Like, how do we engage parents in the process so it benefits the kids? So I love what they're doing at NAES. I love what they're doing at Positive Coaching Alliance, and that's why we have really nice relationships we've built with them.
I do want to, I have one question that we'll come back to, but it's kind of a perfect segue. If people haven't read it, you know, it is on your LinkedIn, and I'm sure on the website as well, but it's an article that you wrote called In Defense of Sports Parents. I definitely want to jump into that because a lot of, you know, kind of the funny saying around youth sports is youth sports, the kids are not the problem, the parents are. And to your point, there's organizations that are working to try and help that. Talk about some of the points you raised in that article and why parents, even if they're completely level-headed and everything else in their life, they see their son or daughter in a sport and just lose it.
Yeah. So when I first started this company or conceptualized it about 3 years ago, I was of the belief that parents, you know, can be disruptive at games, and they're the reason that for the decline in youth sports. And there was an article by Keith Van Horn, the retired basketball player, talking about delusional sports parents. Like, they all think their kids are on track for a scholarship, so they're going to throw tons of money and put pressure on the kid. But then I actually started to study the psychology and physiology of sports parents on the sidelines. And it's a very complex situation you put these parents in when they're paying a lot of money for their kids to play on these travel teams. They're sitting on the sidelines in a stressful environment. And like you said, we found research that shows normal, friendly people from your neighborhood get to the sidelines of games and start to act like monsters. So number one, I started to have sympathy for them. Number two, I started to have curiosity about them. And we've really started to study that dynamic. So I find myself constantly defending sports parents. They are loud. They do say stupid things, but it's because they're in a fight or flight mode at the field, and they're just not thinking before they're speaking, before they're acting. And we're trying to address that both with our newsletter, some of our articles, as well as with our app, because parents just want to be part of the process. And if they are, they will chill out more on the sidelines.
I was going to say, you know, you obviously have a ton of users on the app. Is there any coaches, organizations that you see that do this really well, that maybe communicate prior to the season, during the season, after the season with parents about expectations and roles and responsibilities and what more often than not to do?
It's interesting. We've actually been finding that paid trainers and paid coaches are using the app more. And that surprised us. We thought that, you know, parent coaches would be using this a lot. We're finding that these paid training companies and these paid trainers, they want to find a way to differentiate themselves and provide a better service because they're being paid to do that. So by providing feedback, by using our app to provide objective and fair player evaluations throughout the season, they're elevating the level of service they're delivering. And so we're seeing a lot of paid trainers and training organizations using this.
What are some of the current trends since you've started this in U Sports Now that you're seeing, and where do you think — this is a tough question because it's so high level, but where do you see U Sports changing in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, so I think one of the big challenges that is being addressed right now is how to engage parents in the process.
Yep.
So you have a whole school of thought that believes parents need to step back and stay out of the process. Kids need to learn on their own. They need to determine their own destiny.
Yep.
I understand that. But at the same time, when parents are paying $2,500 a year for their kids to be on a travel team, and that trend is growing,
rising, yep,
you just can't keep them out of the process. It's not going to happen. So how to engage parents in a positive way, how to make them part of the process, that's definitely an important area right now. I think the second trend that's going to become very big is, how do we get back to free play for kids? So the Aspen Institute Project Play has a big initiative for this. And there's two reasons for it. Number one, we want kids to just learn to go out on the playground, in the park, on their driveway, choose up teams, and learn how to play. You don't need a trainer or a parent. You don't need to pay a lot of money to do that. The second reason is, certainly kids that don't have the means to pay $2,500 a year to join a travel team are being left behind. And we need to find ways to get programs going in the parks, at the schools, that don't cost anything so kids can be active. So free play is another big trend right now.
So in light of the recent college admission scandal with some celebrities, you know, paying to get their kids into college, let's try to break down the term helicopter parent, where that came from. It obviously differs based on generation, but why is it so important for particular parents to have their kids be successful in sport?
I think this is a very complex conversation, but it has a lot to do with Generation X parents. So I see it myself as a Generation X parent, but I also see the dichotomy within my own household. Like, there's a lot of pressure on parents to get their kids to be on a certain soccer travel team. And it may not be because they want their kid to get a scholarship and get into Harvard. I think those are kind of extreme circumstances. But it might just be that all the other kids that your kid is friends with are trying out for that team. And you fear that if your child doesn't try out for that team, your child's going to miss out. I've seen it with my own daughter when she was 7 years old and all of her friends were trying out for the travel team.
Think about that.
And I didn't think she was ready for it, but my wife convinced me that all of her friends are doing it and she wants to play with her friends, which I get. So I kind of gave in, and now I'm the coach of the team, so I really gave in. But there's a lot of fear of missing out. Like, your kid, if they don't get more training or don't make a certain team, that they're not going to be successful or they'll be left out. There's a fear that they won't be socialized with a group of friends and they'll be left out. So, you know, again, I'm always defending sports parents.
Yep.
Because it is a very complex situation.
Yeah, and I think something that differed from, and I think honestly, millennials get all the crap in the world, but I really do think when our generation, and obviously they're started, but when our generation is about 40, 45, and we're all parents, or a ton of us are parents,
that it will come back around because we've experienced the helicopter. And I hope, or at least I pray to God, that we have seen that doesn't work. It's not successful. Let's not do that. So I hope the millennials come through. They've certainly been chastised in the media for, you know, killing or canceling everything. But if we could do one thing right, saving youth sports from the helicopter parent would be great.
I have faith in millennials. I hope it will happen. I hope we get more back to free play. But at the moment, I mean, it's literally soccer tryout season in the Northeast United States right now.
Yep.
It's a miserable time because travel sports have grown so much. They've eclipsed recreation programs. They've eclipsed school programs. I mean, you have kids not striving to be a varsity player at their high school, but rather to be on the club, baseball, soccer, or basketball team in their area. So I hope we see some positive change for sure.
Yep. One other thing on this topic that we want to talk about is, and you mentioned it earlier, is, you know, what we see now in youth sports, because it's so expensive, is the difference between people that can afford the program and the people that cannot. And to your point, because this trend is moving forward at an alarming rate, the recreation programs aren't as, maybe not even as high quality, but they're not as many. To your point, the school programs may not be as great. So who can help? Who is responsible? Who can try and bridge that gap?
It's a bit of a runaway train right now.
Yeah.
Because what's changed over the last generation is that in terms of travel teams, kids can try out for travel teams in their own town. Now they can try out in any of the surrounding towns.
Yep.
There are independent clubs in nearby towns. There are facilities that have their own clubs. So kids have many travel sport options. And for families who can afford it, they're paying for it. Yep. So there's a lot of momentum in that direction. I would say the answer is actually discipline and parents to step forward and say, my kid is 7 years old. Even though there are travel soccer programs for my child, we all need to say, our kids are just not mature enough. They're not ready. It's not going to benefit them. They're not going to be more likely to get a scholarship because they're playing travel soccer at 7 years old.
Yep.
I really would love to see kids under 10 years old stay in recreation programs unless you are so elite that you need a whole different level of competition. I don't know if I answered that question very well, but it's a really tough question.
No, yeah, and we see it all the time. We deal with schools, communities, parents from pre-K all the way up to, you know, 12th grade. And there certainly is a drop-off of parent involvement right in that middle school, maybe going into high school age. But staying on this topic for at least one more is, especially in New York, and I'm 29 years old, so certainly not too far off from, you know, high schoolers now. But when I grew up, I went home after school. You know, that was it. I was either playing a sport or I went home. I was a latchkey kid, right? So my parents came home at 6. Yes. I was home at 3, had a PB&J, and then went play with my friends. That, I think New York City is its own bubble because that just simply doesn't exist. There's always something going on, and you've got to be in an after-school program. And I think that goes back to your point of a little bit fear of missing out, but there's this massive want and need for parents, especially in the pre-K, which is wild, pre-K through third grade, to basically expose your kid to everything. Chess, tennis, piano, coding. Sports is almost coming second for that. Is that going to continue? And why has that happened? Because for me, now there certainly was a degree of my parents wanting me to try things, but if I said, I don't really like that, it was kind of the end of the discussion. Like, I didn't like soccer, so I played basketball, and they were fine with it. I'm like, okay, play basketball. Like, how has that changed in the recent years?
So I don't actually have a problem with what you're talking about.
Yeah,
as a parent.
Yeah.
We actually, it's funny, I think yesterday we put an article out from a friend of the company called "Our Kids Are Way Over Scheduled."
Yeah.
Get used to it. So it wasn't a negative article about overscheduling. It was a positive thing. Hmm. And, you know, those kids are, they're in their formative years in elementary school. And it's a great time to figure out what they enjoy, what they're good at. And, you know, for me as a parent, the fear is that your kid gets to be a teenager and they just don't have hobbies. Yep. They don't have things to keep them busy. So you try chess, and then you try sports, and then you try musical theater and dance and gymnastics until your kid finds something. But I definitely will say, you know, my 13-year-old daughter is overscheduled but stays out of trouble as a result of that. So you have to
pros
find
and cons,
a balance.
For sure. Yeah. And do you think that your children's, or every, you know, this kind of the grand landscape of it all, will stay that way through high school? Or do you think it slowly, like to your point, they find something they love and then everything gets canceled and they're full go with that?
Well, I think parents, getting back to this generation of parents, they are controlling their kids' schedules. They are keeping their kids very busy. There's just no end, by the way, to the activities that are available. And by the way, it comes back to money again, too.
Yep. Yep.
You know, when I was growing up, if we wanted to have a band, a few of us got together in someone's basement. Now there are actually music schools that will set your band up, run your band, but you have to pay for these things. That's the case with every activity today. So I think parents right now are willing to pay. They are willing to overschedule their kids. I don't see that changing anytime soon, but let's talk about the downside of that. This generation of kids are not self-aware of how they are progressing and where they're going in life. They're not empowered to make decisions about their own pathway to success, and that therefore they're suffering. And so empowerment and self-awareness are two huge themes in child psychology. I'm sure you hear it in education, and we talk about it in youth sports too.
I think you're spot on. The self-awareness is so lacking, and I'm basketball focused, and so, you know, we just dealt with this weekend. One of our teams went 5-0. They won the tournament, by far the best weekend they had, and we had a player leave the team because he wasn't happy with where he was playing and all these things. And so, without getting into the details, the parent made the decision. The kid did not. You know, he probably would have stayed. And there's only 3 more weeks, so he probably would have stayed at this point. And the stunning lack of self-awareness of why the parents said he wanted him to leave versus, man, if we could only be honest. And I think this is more of a statement slash question is, we're put in tough situations, youth, you know, whether it's league or team organizers, because even if we are honest, there's 900 other options that they can go to, and they do. And so then we kind of get put in this awkward situation of, is it worth the fight? And we're being honest, we just emailed, no problem, sorry it didn't work out, best of luck, if we can be of any help, please let us know, because it's not worth the battle. So I think, like, yes, there's more opportunity than ever right now, which is a fantastic thing because more kids are playing in a sense. But also, unless, you know, let's say basketball specific, teams commit to, you know, like, you're on this team for a season, I think you just continue to see the hop, which then leads to high school transfers, which then leads to the massive college transfer market. And to your point, like, they didn't make the decision, and they just greener, it's always greener, it's always greener, it's always greener, it's the coach fault, not me, and the self-awareness. Then you're 22, and it's not there, which is bad.
Yes. So at first, you're like a little angry at those parents. Then you send them the email to say, sorry, it didn't work out. Give me their phone number. I want to call them because I want to help those parents. I want to help them understand. I know they want what's best for their kids, but the fact is, once you start that trend, that pattern, that you're willing to move and take your kid away from their friends, the chemistry of building a team, it's a selfish approach, and I really want to help parents avoid that.
An adversity. You have to deal with it, right?
That's right.
Like,
that's
this,
right.
And this is the easiest adversity.
That's
you didn't
right.
make a couple shots. Like, this is not anything serious, but it will teach you how you yourself will deal with it. And if you just move on, well, then it's wash and that's it. And so,
that's right.
Yeah, a tough thing that I think is people are always working on. But that concludes all the serious ones. We have one last funny question that we ask everybody. And some people say it's the hardest. And I guess I'll give you two options since you're a New Jersey guy. But what is your favorite New York City slice of pizza? And if you're going to go to New Jersey, that's totally fine. If you have both, even better. But favorite slice of pizza, how about the Northeast? We'll do that. It opens it up to a lot.
I mean, I'm a Jersey guy, and I'll take Jersey pizza over New York City pizza.
Wow.
Will that get me thrown off?
No, absolutely not. We're Connecticut people, so we argue Connecticut has the best pizza, New Haven.
We just visited California on family vacation and went into probably a half dozen pizza places and couldn't get a good slice out there. Yeah. And as much as I love the climate in San Diego, without pizza, I just can't stay there.
They got good tacos though, right?
They sure do.
Yeah, okay. Sure do. So New Jersey, better than New York. Is there a family spot that you guys go to all the time?
In New Jersey, kind of every neighborhood pizza place is good. Every sushi restaurant in New York is pretty good. Yep. So not one in particular.
Okay, so the statement is New Jersey over New York. We'll take that. Last thing, where can people find you? Website, social media, all that good stuff.
Yes, so our website is www.isport360.com. I will tell you that for the next 7 days, if you go to our website, you'll see there's a promotional code to get the spring season free. Nice. That is going to go away in 1 week.
Okay.
Other than that, we're on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. As I mentioned, we have a youth sports newsletter that is, I would say, informative and frequently funny. It's very engaging. We have 70,000 subscribers. Our content you can find all over the web. So please follow us. Please check us out. Please try the app and let us know what you think.
Awesome. Ian, thank you so much for coming. Really appreciate it. And we'll have you on again soon and talk about all the same issues in a couple months and see where we're at.
Good stuff. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Game. Make sure to subscribe in the iTunes store and be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram @KidsInTheGameNY and Facebook @KidsInTheGameNYC.